Well, it's Matinee 76.
Yeah, and I can't remember what movies we saw. You're going to have to remind me on this one. What was
it? Yeah, again, we didn't go to the theater again this week because, again, nothing really started.
The corona plague.
Well, that too, but like I said, nothing really started either. Yeah, now, we should go this coming week because I think Quiet Place 2 starts, and there was one other thing that was maybe starting, maybe Bloodshot or something.
Yeah.
But this week we watch stuff on Netflix and Shudder like we usually do when there's not enough stuff playing in the theater. So the first one that we're going to talk about seems to be very popular on Netflix. It just got added like a week or two ago. This is Spencer Confidential. One with Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
And it was directed by Peter Berg. And I actually didn't know this, and I haven't seen any of the other ones, but this is actually their fifth collaboration. They've made four movies together previous to this. Peter Berg is also an actor. I actually, when I saw his picture, I was like, oh, I recognized him for, I can't remember what movies, but I've seen him in a whole bunch of movies. But he directs movies as well, and this is the fifth one that he's done.
I didn't know that they had other ones. Maybe they're good, too. This is a good movie.
Yeah, most people seem to like some of their other collaborations, like Lone Survivor. A lot of reviewers talked about how much they liked that one. Deepwater Horizon, Patriot's Day. Most people said that they did one called Mile 22, which wasn't so good. But most of the other ones got pretty, got pretty good reviews and stuff.
Yeah, what this one is almost kind of like an 80s action buddy throwback flick. You're talking about something kind of like Beverly Hills Cop, 48 Hours, Lethal Weapon. It's in that genre, and it was good. I liked it.
I did, too. I enjoyed this much more than I thought I was going to. Now, as I said, I haven't seen the other movies that they've made together, but apparently those were mostly, like, action-oriented or more, like, based on true story type of stuff, whereas this one is kind of more a comedy, like an action buddy cop comedy. Yeah. It has like action and it has violence in it, stuff like that too, but
it really, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you. It really reminded me of Beverly Hills Cop. Mark Wahlberg playing Axel Foley, but his own, you know what I mean? A fish out of water cop story.
It gave me a 48 Hours vibe, but I will say, and maybe this is a bold statement, but I actually liked this a bit better than 48 Hours because when we rewatched 48 Hours the other day, I had forgotten how unlikable Nick Nolte's character was.
Yeah, that was part of that movie, though.
Yeah, I know.
I like 48 Hours revisiting it. The beginning, one quarter of that movie was kind of stale.
Yeah.
But when Eddie joined up and then they started doing the
thing, yeah, he kind of really, like breathed some life into it.
Yeah.
This one, the best thing about this one, I think, and this is another thing that I didn't really realize when I was watching it. Now, this is based on a novel character, a repeating novel character, that was, I believe the novels first started to come out in the 70s, like 1974, by a guy called Robert B. Parker. And then after he died, a guy called Ace Atkins took over for him. Now, this character has also been the basis. He's been in like 50 books. He was also the basis for, you remember that show from the 80s that was on ABC, I think it was, called Spencer for Hire, about a private eye? That's the same character
as
Mark Wahlberg is playing in this.
All right, so they're bringing that back.
Yeah, sort of. And so this is very, very loosely based on...
I never saw that, so
I didn't either.
I didn't catch that.
I mean, I had heard of that show, but I don't think I ever saw it.
No, I never saw it.
So this is loosely based on one of the Spencer novels, which is called Wonderland. I haven't read that book, but from what I can gather from other sources and other people that have read the book, this is not very similar. It has kind of like a similar structure, but a lot of the characters are different and the comedic tone is different and things like that. But it does seem like Netflix, if this is successful, and it looks like it's been the number one on Netflix, at least the last few days that I've checked, it seems like they're trying to start their own kind of homegrown franchise out of these books, because there are a lot of them, and the guy that's writing the more recent ones is still writing them, like they're still coming out.
It was fast-paced, the acting was great in it, real good, had good action, real good story, likable characters. It's kind of in a classic tale. It's kind
of
in a classic
It's very
format.
Much like an 80s buddy comp, which seems to be like people that it seems to be getting, it depends on where you look at the reviews. It seemed like Google users, it seemed like it was 93% like. It seemed like Rotten Tomatoes was more like half and half, or whatever. IMDb was like half and half. It did seem like really the only criticism that people were leveling at it was, well, it's not really anything new. It's like, you know, it's a buddy cop thing, and it, you know, hews to a lot of the tropes of that genre.
But that's good.
But in a way, like, that's that did good. Not bother me in the slightest, even though, yes, it's not doing anything earth-shattering. Yes, it's not. But, I mean, I think the best thing about it is Mark Wahlberg and his interactions with the guy that becomes his sidekick, who's played by, his name is Hawk in the movie, and he's played by Winston Duke, who was in Black Panther, obviously, and he was also the dad in Us, and he was fucking fantastic in that. And the character that he plays in this is so funny, and the two of them are, like, really, they have, like, really good, like, comedic timing and, like, really good comedic chemistry together.
To me, he's the white Axel Foley. He's an ex-con, ex-cop, private investigator.
Yeah.
And he's a badass, he's smart, but he's funny. He wins, he loses. You know, even though Eddie Murphy always won. Well, no, I guess he did kind of lose a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know,
you got to lose sometimes, otherwise there's no stakes.
It's that same genre, it's that same kind of feel good action adventure cop buddy type stuff. It's just, that's the genre. I think they just nailed it.
Yeah, it's just, this is really just a great movie to, you know, it's like, it's a Friday night, you don't have anything going on, you're drinking, you order a pizza, you just, you know, put this movie on, and it's just fun. It's just a fun, like, all the characters are funny.
Nothing's pissing you off, nothing's fucking really, nothing's grossing you out, nothing's scaring you. It's just interesting characters and shit happening, and you're going...
Yeah, and there's just, like, funny lines. And really, some of the comedic stuff, like, it's not really, really, like, over-the-top zany or anything like that. I feel like a lot of the comedy is...
Kind of realistic.
Yeah, like, realistic or a little bit understated, well, but in a way, I think that makes it work better.
Yeah, that's why it kind of took me back to the Eddie Murphy movies, Eddie Murphy cop movies, where you could tell that Murphy was kind of ad-libbing stuff. It felt very natural, the shit that's happening.
Yeah.
A lot of it. Some of it, of course, is clownish, like his ex-wife or his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
But they met, was that his ex-wife?
Sissy. I think it was his girlfriend. Yeah. I don't think they said they were married, yeah, but I can't remember. Either. She was funny, though.
Yeah,
she's very funny. Abrasive, like in a very Boston type of way. This is a very, very Boston movie.
I lived in Boston 5 years. I'm telling you,
this is a very Boston movie. I mean, as it would, because that's where Mark Wahlberg is from. So he kind of made a career out of playing these types of characters that come from this neighborhood. But a lot of the, and Alan Arkin is in this too, playing Mark Wahlberg, playing Spencer. I guess Alan Arkin's character, he calls him Henry. At first, I thought it was his dad, but it's not his dad. I felt like it was, you know, like Rocky and Pauly or whatever. I thought it was that kind of situation where, because Henry like runs a boxing gym or a UFC gym or something like that, which is where Hawk comes from. And they, you know, he let Hawk move into the house while
all kinds of funny shit
Spencer was
house.
In prison.
Yeah.
Now, Spencer was a cop, but then he goes to prison, but for a good reason. You know what I mean? Like he knew that.
Can't spoil that.
Yeah. Either. I'm not really going to say like what the reason was, but it was like a justified reason.
Yeah. And then another thing is about the movies that had a really good villain. And I don't want to spoil that because you don't know who the villain is until later on.
Yeah. Cause there's kind of like
and
a twist.
He's
later
a
on.
Real likable kind of villain. He's kind of sympathetic in a certain way. You know what I mean? He just has a different motivation. And, you know, trying to protect a bunch of bad cops that he's involved with. But
yeah, it's a cop kinda, corruption type of movie.
He's not a good guy, but most of these guys aren't really good guys. It's just, you just have to see the movie. You'll see.
And as I said, as I was saying before, a lot of the humor that I liked about it, other than, like, the character of his ex-girlfriend, who... I can see how some people, she's like just loud and abrasive and stuff like that, but I thought she was a delight, like especially talking about poodles coming out her ass and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But probably my favorite character in this, though, was Winston Duke's character of Hawk.
Yeah.
Just because he was like, it's a totally different character than he played in Us. He's just like this big, strong, silent type. He's kind of like a health nut. He's like an up-and-coming like UFC fighter or what, or a boxer or whatever. And he doesn't talk a lot, but there does seem like a lot of kind of depth going on. And one of my favorite scenes in it was when, later on when they said like one of the villains or somebody that they were like going after, and he said that he had killed a cat. And So he'd kill people and shit too.
Yeah.
But then Hawk's character is like, he killed a cat? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, and he just goes right in there. And I was like, right, exactly.
Yeah. So overall, what do you think? What do you think of the movie?
Yeah. This was actually like a real, like I said, it's been, it seems like it's getting kind of mixed reviews in some venues, but then like some really good ones. Like I said, Google reviews, it seemed like 93% positive. This is just a really, it's not reinventing the wheel. It's not anything like that. If you like 80s buddy cop action comedy type movies, and you like Mark Wahlberg, you liked the other movies that he did with Peter Berg, then I see no reason why you wouldn't like this one. Like I said, it's not super original or anything like that, but it's just a lot of fun. The characters are fun. The interactions are fun. You know,
I'm going to say something similar to that. I'm going to say it's a movie of the genre. It did hit the mark.
Yeah.
It's what they actually achieved what they tried to do. They made a movie that if you liked, say, like Beverly Hills Cop or Lethal Weapons, that type of classic cop movie, it's a modern version of that, but they didn't go outside the genre.
Yeah.
It's a fresher take on that. It's a more modern, the way it looks, you know, of course. But it still kind of had that nostalgic, for me, that kind of nostalgic movie feeling. I felt like I was watching an old movie that I had seen before, in a way.
Yeah.
Or a movie that I had seen many times already.
Yeah.
But that's like a good thing. It's not like
something it was boring. Like comforting, like kind of a, you know, like a familiar.
I didn't see certain things coming there. You know, I didn't know what was happening. I just felt very comfortable in the movie because I understood the vibe and the genre immediately.
Yeah.
What they were like, okay.
Yeah. All right, we're doing this. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I know this one.
Yeah.
All right,
because
this is good. You know, it's like that.
And you guys, I mean, you guys know that, you know, we have kind of different tastes in movies, but usually you can tell if he's going to like a movie because he'll put his tablet down and, like, actually start paying attention, like, in the first five or ten minutes. And this movie, I kind of put it on, and then he came in, and he kind of picked his tablet up, but then he's like, oh, it's one of these kind of movies.
Yeah,
and then he just put the tablet down and watched it. So
well, it was speaking.
Which usually doesn't happen.
It was speaking my language.
Yeah.
You know, and I would say maybe one out of five movies speaks my language today.
Yeah.
The ones that we're watching.
Yeah.
I think the ones that we don't watch, I think is maybe one out of 50 speak my language.
I mean, I wouldn't really know because we don't watch them.
We don't watch them, but I'm just looking and going, you know what I mean?
You don't
and I'm not the
like...
only one. You know, I got people on Instagram and Facebook that go, we got the same taste of movie. Know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm not the only one, you know, that's like this. It's just, and it's, I don't necessarily think it's a generational thing because there's younger guys that, the exact same movies that I like and like the new ones and the old ones.
Yeah. I don't think it's an age thing.
I don't think so either.
I think it's just like a personality type thing. I'll watch pretty much anything, but you know.
And it's pretty obvious to me, you know, as old as I am, as experienced as I am, men and women are different. men kind of tell stories a different way and they like being told stories a different way than women do. Men like to get right to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They'll jump and they'll kind of jump and tell you what kind of movie it's going to be. And then they back up and tell you the movie. So, and that's kind of like, that's how guys tell stories. And for me, the movies that I like.
So you spoil
like,
the ending you and then you kinda, go, and then
you're
you go back
and spoil it.
And this is
it,
how
you
we
go
got
back
to the ending that I just spoiled.
Sometimes, yeah. Well, it doesn't have to do it exactly.
You're like, because I have to know if I'm going to like it or not.
Exactly. Exactly. But it doesn't, but they don't have to do it that way.
Yeah.
It's just like guys are learning. Most guys, and I've noticed this with other dudes, they're waiting for certain cues to happen. And then they go, okay, I got to see this. That's, you know what I mean? I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
Women seem to have that a little more forgiveness. They'll wait around and watch something, and they'll watch it for 20 or 30 minutes before they even know what the movie's about.
Most guys don't mind doing that.
Most guys won't tolerate it.
I mean, it's very, very rarely, like, I'll put on a movie, and, like, after 5 or 10 minutes, I'm like, man, I don't think this is going to get any better. That doesn't usually happen. Usually, if I start watching something, I know that I at least have some kind of passing interest in it, so I'll usually see it through to the end unless it really, really bores me or really, really pisses me off. That doesn't usually happen because I usually like to give things a chance. Because sometimes, you know, even if something's like in the beginning, like it'll get really good at the end. So I'm like waiting to see what'll happen. So yeah, I'm like much more...
Women are more forgiving.
I'm more patient. I'm more forgiving. And I'm more like open to other people's ideas, other people's visions. It's like maybe I wouldn't have necessarily done it like that. But it's like, yeah, I see where you were going with that. And I think it was successful and from your point of view, even though that's not how I would have made it.
Yeah. And I think kind of like most guys, their minds are kind of like on rails. It's kind of like on a track.
I've noticed that, actually.
It's like we expect the information to come.
No offense.
It's just the way we are.
I've noticed that.
It's the way we are.
Yeah.
It's very linear, and you know what I mean? We expect things to be given to us in a certain order or the right way.
Yeah.
Or you know what I mean? If it starts, like I said, I call it my 10-15-minute rule.
Yeah.
If I don't know what the fuck's going on in 10 or 15 minutes, or I don't give a shit in 10 or 15 minutes, then I'm not going to care.
Yeah.
That's just, and that rule has held up with me. That if I start paying attention to it later, I still don't like it anymore. It has to catch me early.
Yeah.
And I can't describe it, but other guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There's something about the way the story's told.
I remember reading somewhere, I don't remember where I read this, you know, but I remember somewhere that that men's brains are like a sledgehammer, whereas women's brains are like a Swiss Army knife.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, I would think so.
I don't know how true, because like I said, any kind of generalizations, it's like obviously there's outliers and everyone's not going to be the same.
There's hormonal differences, you know.
But I have told him, I'm like, my brain is like 47,000 tab, like Google tabs open.
Yeah.
A young guy
or 16, 17, 18, high testosterone, he's not going to see things the same way a guy in his 40s is going to see it.
Yeah.
It's two different, but there's a lot in common. You know what I mean? Like, I can see it from his point of view. Just that, you know, I don't see it that way anymore. That type of deal, you know? I mean, just watch how they review products and shit. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know what I mean? Anyway, biology is a factor in this. I don't give a shit what anybody says.
But I did like this movie a lot, actually. I thought it was...
This one? Yeah.
It was a great time.
So...
Even though, it's kind of a little bit of guy movie,
it's
I guess.
It's a male-oriented movie, but...
But yeah. I don't see why women couldn't enjoy it also. I had a lot of fun with it. I thought it was very funny. I really liked, you know, the character interactions between Mark Wahlberg's character and Winston Duke's character. That was probably my favorite part. Also, Alan Arkin was great in it. So, you know...
Not to shut it down, because now I'm on a roll... There are some male-oriented movies that are classics even among women, like Alien 1 and 2.
Well, yeah, who
everybody
doesn't fucking
agrees,
love those?
Everybody agrees that...
Those are great fucking movies.
Great fucking
I don't
movies.
Care who you are.
Great fucking
you
movies.
You could be from outer space and you still love that
with
movie.
A realistic heroine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just realistic to me, you know what I mean? And she's
the characters are realistic. They all seem like real lived-in people.
This whole thing about, you have to identify with the characters. I identify with Ripley.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm sure a woman can identify with a male character.
Yeah.
You know, I can go, man, I'd be shitting if I was in her shoes. Oh, man. Oh, man, that thing's coming. You know, of course.
Yeah.
So,
that's
you know,
good. Well, I
it
think,
doesn't have to be...
I think for a long time, like prior to, you know, maybe the 60s or 70s... I feel like a lot of main characters in movies were men. So, I mean, women going to movies, you had to relate to a man character because that's kind of all there was in there.
Yeah, well, 50s movies, the way they were written, I mean, the women were just like fucking bit parts.
That's what I mean.
Really
so it's like you didn't have... So women have always had to relate to male characters because that's... For a long time, that was the only character that had any depth. It's like a lot of times female characters didn't have any depth to that.
I think it was mostly because what we've watched is horror and sci-fi, and that was oriented towards young guys.
Yeah.
For the time. But the really good, well-written ones like King Kong... They had female characters in King Kong, and that was a fucking badass flick.
Although I will say, on the flip side of that, I have found that horror and sci-fi tended to be a lot more progressive in that area.
Yeah.
You know, and we're open to having, you know, female, you know, characters like main characters, African-American main characters and stuff like that. And it didn't happen on purpose, I don't
budgetary,
think.
Budgetary, and that's just who they had.
But sometimes I feel like that as a genre, since it's always been, not so much nowadays, but, you know, since it was always kind of a disreputable or a younger person genre.
You could get away with
shit. I feel like you could get away with a lot more. There was a lot more open possibilities and stuff. So I feel like they broke a lot of taboos.
Yeah, and the reason why Night of the Living Dead had a black lead is because he was the best actor.
So it was just
meritocracy.
But it gave it like a depth that it maybe didn't have, when he first
especially when he beats that old white dude's ass in front of his wife.
Yeah.
That, with the whole black-white dynamic.
So
in the context of the 60s, that was like, oh, man, this movie isn't fucking around. This for real.
Because
I'd have beat that fucker's ass, too.
Me, too.
You know, but he was...
Me,
but,
too.
But when they threw the color mix in the context of the 60s, That movie knocked it out of the fucking park.
It did.
And they didn't fucking fill out the paperwork the right way.
I know, and now it's public domain.
Public domain.
That's a shame.
Lost his
money. The only criticism I can make is that the female character in there, Barbara,
yeah.
Is totally fucking useless. I mean, I know she's in shock and everything, and at least they do have another female character in the farmhouse.
Yeah, there are other ones. The mom.
That's more, you know, that are more resourceful, so that it's not just this useless.
We're getting on another subject, but it's still kind of important. When I was a kid, Barbara scared me. So I think that was a good character.
Yeah, maybe so.
Because
I
was like, man, that's creepy. What happened to her? She's crazy? Wow. You know what I mean?
I guess she was supposed to be in shock.
She was in shock because of what happened to her. But her shock was like disturbing me at 10, 11, 12, 13.
I can see that.
It made the whole thing creepier.
Yeah.
You had this guy trying to help this girl and she didn't even really know where she was, saying random shit.
Yeah.
And, you know,
saying random shit.
When you're like 10, 11, you don't know if that's a possibility or not. You're just seeing it and you're going, oh, man.
Some people would probably react that way.
Yeah.
Sure. So I guess I can't, if she was the only female character in the movie, then it might bother me more. But since there are, like you said, like the wife who actually does stand up to her husband.
Yeah, then there was the...
And that other girl.
The monster chick. The mod chick, remember?
Yeah. And
would you call her a mod chick?
No. She was just like a regular
girl. Just like a regular
girl.
Chick. Yeah.
She was like the girlfriend of that younger guy.
Yeah, right,
that, you know, where they tried to go out and get the gas and everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's not as problematic in that regard.
No.
But yeah, it's like, yeah, we went off on this big long tangent. Well, since we're off on a tangent.
How the hell are you going to say anything problematic about fucking about Night of the Living Dead?
No, I just said I can see how some people might see that as problematic.
Yeah, but it's
just
not.
Because she's completely useless.
If she was
the only female character in the movie, then it would annoy me.
You're reading into it
but
too much.
Not.
But yeah, it was. That was the blueprint that created The Walking Dead. The first
well,
few
that created
seasons,
the whole zombie the, movie yeah, genre, which that, is still with us to this day.
That first really awesome three seasons of The Walking Dead would have never happened without that movie.
No, definitely not.
No.
But I was going to say, while we were on the topic of being off topic, if you guys have noticed, we rearranged the office.
Yeah, going to have a new studio
So if you see like back there in that back corner where that black and gray bookshelf are, that's where the desk that we're sitting at used to be.
Yeah.
So we moved it over here just so we could have a better backdrop. And we ordered two new chairs.
Yeah.
So we're going to like set up a little studio back there,
I'm
like with the bookshelves
to get this
and shit.
Lighting right.
And we'll try to get the lighting right. Yeah. We're just doing this kind of like...
And getting rid of those old chairs, because those old chairs would have us down scrunching like we were on damn
yeah,
bean
we,
bags
we ordered
and
new chairs.
Triple chins and...
I don't think that they're going to be here for the next episode.
They were uncomfortable chairs.
But yeah, we got two matching chairs and they're supposed to come like next week sometime. So probably for the next movie retrospective, they'll probably... we'll probably have them and we'll have it all set up by then. But yeah, so yeah. So Spencer Confidential on Netflix.
Yeah, it's good. Go see it.
Get a pizza, get a beer, sit down and watch it. It's a lot of fun.
It's fun.
All right, the next one we're going to talk about is another new Netflix movie. This one comes from Spain, and it is called Twin Murders, The Silence of the White City.
Yeah.
This is kind of like... one of those sort of like Baroque serial killer movies, very much in the Silence of the Lambs, Seven type of vein. It reminded me a little bit, I mean, this might be kind of out there, but it reminded me slightly just in its whole aesthetic and like the whole like artistic, like, you know, aesthetic of it. It reminded me of this old, kind of one of the more iconic Giallo films, The House with the Laughing Windows. It kind of reminded me a little bit of that. Although, it's not quite as good as all of those comparisons imply, I will say that. I did like this movie, but it was kind of a mixed bag. So basically, it's set in this city called Vitoria in Spain. And the setup of the story is that 20 years ago in this city, there was a serial killer called the Sleeper Killer. And what he would do was he would pick out like a random man and a woman, and then he would kill them and he would lay them out in this particular thing. They'd both be naked and he'd put like these big like sunflowers like over their genital regions and make it look like they were sleeping. Like he would like put their hands together and stuff like that. And it seemed like he was sending some sort of message, although for a long time he couldn't figure out what it was. Now, they thought that they had caught this guy and they put him in jail. I think his name was Ignacio, the guy that they thought had done it. So he's in jail. But even though he's still in jail, these murders start again, like 20 years later, So they have this like detective named Unai, who is trying to figure out if it's the same person, if Ignacio was not the guy that did it the first time, or if this is a copycat, or some other things like surrounding that. Now, I will say that much like Silence of the Lambs, where they show you who Buffalo Bill is, this one reveals the killer about halfway through the movie. So you know who the killer is, but the cops don't know. So some of the suspense is coming from them trying to figure out who the killer is. I'm not going to spoil who the killer is because I wasn't expecting it. Like, I saw some reviews that said, yeah, they figured it out, but I didn't figure it out. And I was like, oh shit, it's that guy. So you know what I mean? So a lot of the suspense comes from that. That said, though, there was like, I really liked some aspects of this. Like the way it's shot is really beautiful. Like all the buildings and stuff that, you know, it's in Spain and they filmed this like medieval looking city. So like all the buildings and stuff are really cool, which is probably why it reminded me of like an old giallo movie or something. And I liked sort of like the Baroque aspects of it with, you know, the way that the victims are posed and like this whole mythology behind it, like the serial killer, you know, which they kind of slowly reveal over the course of the movie, like what message that he's trying to send with the way that he poses them and like what all the symbolism is. You know, the way that he kills the people is actually pretty horrible, where he just like has these tube things and he like puts bees in their mouths and like then puts gasoline all over so the bees freak out and they like sting you to death.
That
from inside.
Might have been a spoiler, Jenny.
And shit like that. Well, no, I'm just saying, yeah. No, because they show that pretty early on.
Did it? Okay.
They show that pretty early on in the movie. But there was something that kind of bothered me about it, and I couldn't put my finger on what it was until like I read this other review of it. It almost seems like, and I think this is based on a novel, and the two guys that wrote the screenplay have written some other ones that were apparently pretty popular in Spain and stuff, but I almost felt like this one was trying to almost like hew to a template. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, okay, well, we saw Silence of the Lambs, so what happens, like, this scene, this scene, this scene? And it's almost kind of like they were trying to replicate that. It's not exactly like Silence of the Lambs, but the way it's structured, like, kind of reminded me of that. But it didn't have, like, a real, like, organic flow, like, from scene to scene, like, this happened and then this happened, like, in a natural sort of way.
I'd have to agree.
It almost seemed like, okay, this scene, okay, well, now it's time for this scene to happen, so yeah. We'll have these two characters talking and figuring this out. So it almost, like, the first time I was watching, I'm like, I like this, but the editing, is there something about the editing that's very strange, and I couldn't put my finger on it. And I think that's what it was, that it was almost kind of like the plot was a little convoluted. Like, a couple of times when a character would come up and they'd be talking and I'd be like, okay, well, wait, who is this again? And then I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Because the backstory is, like, really complex. So you really have to kind of, like, pay attention to who this person is and why this person was doing that and all this other kind of stuff. So it took me a while to kind of, like, catch the wave of the movie because it almost seemed like it was just going from beat to beat to beat.
Yeah, I was out of it by that point.
You missed like the first whole half of the movie, which you can't really, this is definitely one that if you want to watch it, you really need to pay attention because otherwise you were not going to have the slightest clue what is going on because it's a really, really complicated.
I will say this, it looked like it was competently shot.
Yeah, it's a beautiful looking movie.
The acting looked very good.
Yeah.
The ending had some really cool action horror scenes in it.
Yeah. It's pretty violent. There's a lot of nudity.
Yeah, it was pretty good. The scenes that they showed. But I could tell just by the way, you know, like you said, the flow of the way the scenes were going, I was like, man, this is some convoluted shit here.
Like I said, it's a very, very convoluted story. Yeah. And there's a lot of characters and there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, it's not too bad with like the flashbacks and stuff. There are some flashbacks that show like, you know, why the killer was doing this and who this is in relation to the killer and stuff. It wasn't too egregious, but if you didn't pay attention to who all the characters were. I guess because it's very plot heavy, so, you know, and it's very visual, so they were kind of concentrating on that, and they didn't concentrate as much on the characters, so I feel like you didn't really get a sense. I mean, Unai, who's the main character, he's like a serial killer profiler, detective, or whatever, you know, you find out that his, you know, his pregnant wife was killed, you know, and all this other stuff, so he's kind of like just returning to work after a long, you know, hiatus where he was like getting over his grief. But that's kind of all you learn about him. He's not like a real in-depth. They don't give you a lot of in-depth, you know, stuff into, you know, why he's doing what he's doing, why he's so into this case and all this other kind of stuff. So I feel like they should have focused a little bit more on fewer characters and kind of given them a little more dimension rather than, because this is a very, like I said, it's a very plot heavy movie. So the plot is kind of like dictating what the characters do rather than the other way around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is something that, which is why I thought when I was thinking about it, that I thought the screenwriters were maybe new at this, because that seems like something that amateur writers do. They let the plot dictate the characters' actions, whereas the characters are supposed to dictate what happens in the plot. You know what I mean? So I kind of got the feeling that it was like a little bit reversed. That said, if you like crime thrillers, if you like Silence of the Lambs, if you like foreign language, this has the actress, I think, I can't remember what her name is, but she was in The Orphanage and she's been like a bunch of other stuff too. Orphanage, you should definitely see that because that's a fucking great movie. So if you like crime thrillers, especially like, you know, Spanish language ones, or you like European crime thrillers, you should probably check it out. But I mean, I've seen a lot better ones than this. It's not terrible, but like I said, it's kind of a mixed bag. If you watch it, you'll kind of see what I'm talking about, where it looks really good, but it's a little bit hard to follow. And I had a hard time like keeping all the characters straight and keeping the backstory straight and some other things too. And there's like a little bit of believability issues with like some of the relationships within the characters and why would the cops have been allowed to work on this case when they were emotionally involved and all this other kind of stuff?
It was Spain, though.
Which maybe it works different in Europe. I don't know. But it's sort of like where, you know, whereas in the U.S. at least, and most European countries too, as far as I know, if you are, you know, related to somebody who's like a victim in a murder, for example, they're going to take you off the case, which I think they do all over Europe as well. So it does kind of seem like maybe this is some of it was kind of from the book. So I don't really know. I haven't read the book, but you know, check it out if you're into that kind of thing. I wouldn't go out of my way to watch it, but it wasn't bad if you like that kind of thing. You know what I mean? So, you know. Okay, the third movie we watched actually came out in 2019 and toured at a bunch of European horror festivals and whatnot, but just dropped on Shudder the other day. This is called The Room. No, not that one. It's not the Tommy Wiseau one.
It's another one.
This is another one. This is actually, it's in English, but I believe it was a French or Belgian production or a French-Belgian co-production. Olga Kurylenko is in it from, she was in Quantum of Solace and she was in Oblivion also. So this has like some kind of big stars in it. Kevin Jantz is in it. He was in Revenge, which is also on Shudder and which everybody should check out if you like rape revenge movies because that was really excellent. So, yeah, so this premiered at a festival in Brussels and has kind of been making the rounds and just got to Shudder.
Yeah.
This movie
is a weird fucking movie.
Oh, this is a head trip. I liked this one a lot.
I liked it, too. It was frustrating, though.
It is, but I can see why you're frustrated. And I kind of, like, we can't. I want to spoil it because there's so much I want to, like, talk about this movie. But yeah. I can't spoil it.
All right. They buy this house. This married couple buys this house.
It's in upstate New York, or it's supposed to be. Yeah.
And he finds this weird ass. He didn't know what it was at first because it was a key.
Yeah.
And he threw it away.
In two pieces or something.
And then later on, as he's tearing a wall or moving some wallpaper, he finds a hidden door that goes and that key goes to it and opens it up. And it's just a black room. You can't see in there. So there's this fucking hidden room. And it's just this weird ass room. Well, I guess we could say they don't know why or how it works. There's wires all throughout the walls. You can go in there, and if you wish for something, it comes true. But yeah. It's got to be a thing. Like, if you can wish for money, it'll, boom, it'll make money.
Yeah.
If you wish for famous paintings, it'll make it.
Because that's what he did. He was an artist.
The lights will flicker, and then it'll be there. Well, this course gets him into a lot of trouble, and that's really what this movie's about. The trouble that this shit causes.
Yeah.
All right. Because I don't want to spoil the rules, you know what I mean? Of course, you know, if you have a fucking room that fulfills wishes, you know there's going to be stipulations on the shit.
Yeah, because this is a horror movie.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So
you know,
I can't get into that.
That's what I mean. So I really, really don't want to spoil it because I didn't know. I mean, all I knew about the movie was that it was about a couple that bought a house, because it says this on the little paragraph on Shudder. It's a couple that buys a house and they discover a room in the house that grants wishes. Right. That's all it tells you.
Right. And they're trying to figure out what it is you can wish for. And man, they you'll see.
This is just, it's so, it's pissing me off because it's like, it's so hard to talk about without spoiling stuff.
I was kind of really entertained just by watching them trying to figure out what they could wish for and what would happen.
Yeah. Which anyone would.
Right. So that's the movie. It's a good movie. I think it was frustrating to me because some of the problems that this room's caused, I could have easily solved.
Well, yeah, but.
All right. But they weren't solving that problem easily. Because they should have understood by the other wishes that they made, what happened. You know what I mean? My hands are tied. I can't really tell you anything about it.
Like I said, I was, before we started recording
this. You guys
know
I'm a direct action motherfucker. Some of this shit that would have happened, I went, oh, no. You know what I mean?
Well, see, but that's where the conflict in the movie, this isn't spoiling too much. This is where the conflict in the movie arose, because one of the wishes that they made ended up causing a conflict between the two of them. So if they had both been just like, yeah, let's take care of that issue, then there wouldn't be a conflict. And you can see where the conflict arose from, because there was like, they didn't really go a lot into the backstory or a lot into like their backstory.
The dude knew that you couldn't do that. But she was kind of like emotionally, you know, I'm like, no, you know, this is how it's going to be. I would have just said, no, this shit's too dangerous, and I would have taken care of that no matter what she said.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then the longer you let that ride, the worse it would have got.
Well, the worse it did get.
And the worse it did get, which I called it.
This is, yeah, well, and like I said, this is a horror movie, and it's kind of like, it reminded me of like a really good, like, Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
It's very much like The Monkey's Paw, that type of thing where, you know, you get granted three wishes and they, you know, wish for somebody to come back from the dead or something like that. But it's kind of like, it took that premise, but then it goes in these really kind of like messed up directions, because I didn't know, like I said, other than the wish granting room, that it was a horror movie.
Yeah, and it looks like, so we thought of it the same time, it looked like some kind of Tesla technology.
It did. That's it what I said. Yeah, as soon as he said Tesla, I was like, I was just about to say that.
It wasn't magic. It was some kind of an old turn of the century, or old.
But 18th, I like that they didn't
technology
go into sort. That. They didn't go to, into no.
didn't
why it. Somebody built the house like that, why the room could do that. But you didn't need it.
It looked like something from the age of Tesla.
Yeah. You didn't need it. It was just, you know, it showed it, and it was just like, you know, that's why the house is doing it. And they did have it. There is a plot thread where, like, the guy is trying to figure out.
Yeah.
You know, how the room does what it does. But I like that they just left it mystifying, because it's not important. The movie, the whole theme of the movie is, you know, nothing quite so trite as be careful what you wish for. But it is kind of like that, because it's kind of going to the point where, well, everything that you wish for has consequences that you maybe didn't foresee.
Yeah.
And so I feel like
there's a lot of little details you got to keep track of, because at the end of the movie, then you make yourself question, what was it that you just watched?
Because
there seemed to be more to the room than just wishing for physical things. There's other things. It's almost kind of like, what is it, a holodeck? What is it? You don't know how the room works.
Because a lot more, and that's one of the reasons that I think it was good that they didn't really tell you how it worked.
Right.
The movie had rules.
They thought they knew what the rules were, though, but they may have been wrong.
But they may have been wrong. And that's good, because that's the same situation you would be in.
Right.
If you bought a house and it somehow had a magic, you know, wish-granting room in it, you wouldn't exactly know how it worked until, you know, they experiment and they find out some of the rules and the parameters. But because they can't foresee the consequences of some of the wishes that they make.
Yeah, and it's really, most of the movie is about that one wish that they made.
Yeah.
I think they shouldn't have done that. I think they should have made that wish, resolved it earlier, and then made another couple other fucked up wishes that they had to solve in the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's what I was saying. I was kind of frustrated. I think they could have done a little bit more with this idea.
With the premise, yeah.
With the premise. Instead of getting hung up on that one problem, they should have solved that problem within about 10 minutes and then had two more problems.
Yeah. Although I kind of liked that one focus on, because it seemed like that one wish that they made had so many, it was like dominoes falling down, and it had like all these other unforeseen circumstances. And it also opened up more possibilities of, you know, now the parameters of the room, they thought they knew what they were, but now they don't, because, you know, there's
kinda
other factors at play.
Kind of like a horror version of fucking Back to the Future, where they realize they got the time machine, but in part two, they realize you can fuck up the time stream and make an alternate. You don't know if that's going on. You just have to see it for yourself.
And the thing about like it, I mean, kind of, this is one of those movies where, like I said, there was not a lot of reviews on this that I kind of, you know, tried to research. But there's one guy on there, and I can't remember what the name of the channel is, but he did like it's called Cinema Something. But he like explained the movie. And one of the things that he said about the end, I'm like, oh yeah, shit, I didn't realize that. And then I was reading like all the comments, and like, this is one of those movies that you really should probably see it a second time or maybe a third time, because there's a lot of different possibilities for what the ending might have meant. It's not that it's one of those frustrating, oh, it's an ambiguous ending or anything. There's two, from my point of view, there's two distinct possibilities for what the ending could mean, and both of them are kind of messed up. Right. And like I said, before we started recording, I was like, God, we really should spoil this because it's really hard to talk about if you can't spoil it. And there's like so much shit that I wanted to talk about.
That's better just to have people go see it.
But I think it's better to have people see it. I definitely, definitely recommend this movie. If you really like kind of like mind bender type of movies, you know, or Twilight Zone-y kind of movies where it's just...
Imagine what would happen if you moved into a house and you found a hidden room in there and a key to that hidden room. And that room fulfilled a damn wishes.
And all you have to do is go in there and say, I want $1 million.
I want a Rembrandt. What kind of shit would you start wishing for?
Yeah.
And that's what the movie's about.
Yeah. But like I said, they wish for something, which probably wasn't a good idea, but I can see why they did it.
Yeah.
Because there is a justification for why they did it. And then, like, the fact that they made this one particular wish. Yeah, it just, like, makes everything go more and more fucked up as the movie goes on.
Well, you know, if you were a single man, you'd go in there and you'd start fucking wishing for fucking babes. You know what I'm talking about? And just watch.
Well, that might go wrong also.
That would go, according to this movie, that would go wrong.
That would go wrong. But I feel like even wishing for objects, I think there would come a point, because early on in the movie, I kind of thought it was going to go the direction of, oh, well, if you can just wish for whatever you want, then nothing has any value. Yeah. Which is not exactly the direction that it went. It went like in a direction that I didn't exactly expect. You know what I mean? Pondered bigger questions than I was expecting.
They don't know what we're talking about, but
no.
If that's what it was, it might have just been a holodeck.
It's possible.
Yeah.
But like I said, there's a lot of different possibilities. Right. So if you have Shudder, which, you know, if you're a horror fan, you probably should get it. They didn't pay me for that plug. I just really like Shudder.
Yeah.
But they just recently added it. It doesn't seem like it's gotten a lot of press, although a lot of the horror festivals in Europe, it showed a lot over there, and that seems to be getting really positive reviews over there. So definitely check it out if you like these kind of like Mindbender, Twilight Zone, Monkey's Paw type of what-if scenario movies, because it definitely goes in some messed up directions.
Yeah.
And if you do see it, like, message me, because I want to like talk to somebody about this without spoiling it for everybody, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, definitely check this one out.